You're very welcome back to Off the Ball in our live commentary game from the Premier League this afternoon. Manchester City going 6 points clear at the summit. Two goals for Raheem Sterling, also goals from Emerick Laporte, from Gundogan, Mahrez and De Bruyne as they won 6-3 against Leicester at the Etihad. City were 4-0 up after 25 minutes and coasting, and then Leicester came back into the game, pulling it back to 4-3 with goals early in the second half from Maddison, Lukman and Fahmy Iheanacho. But those goals from Laporte and Sterling in the last 20 minutes ensuring that Man City's winning run continues. Elsewhere, Arsenal consolidated fourth spot with victory away to Norwich. Watching this one for us was Guy Swindles.
Norwich 0, Arsenal 5. Arsenal completely and utterly dominant. It started in the 6th minute when Saka, as the Norwich defence stood off, curled the ball home. It was a super effort from Tierney just before the break, slamming it in left-footed. After the break, Arsenal just went from strength to strength. Saka got his second, almost identical to his first, curling in to the far post. Lacazette then just won a penalty, which he in turn converted, and there was still time added on for Smith Rowe on as a substitute, left unmarked at the far post to dink the ball home. Norwich 0, Arsenal 5.
Very comfortable for Tottenham Hotspur against COVID-19 hit Crystal Palace. Watching this one for us was Ian Beach.
Tottenham 3, Crystal Palace 0. This game was effectively decided in a 6 minute spell towards the end of the first half. Crystal Palace had been playing well up to that point, so well that the home crowd was being kept quiet, but two of their defenders were dragged out of position as Tottenham launched a counter-attack, and that allowed Harry Kane to sweep home the first goal. 2 minutes later, Lucas Moura headed the second, and 4 minutes after that, Palace had Wilfried Zaha sent off for a second bookable offence. Son Heung-min added the third in the second half as Tottenham coasted to 3 points. Tottenham 3, Crystal Palace 0.
And Southampton edged a 5-goal thriller against West Ham. At the London Stadium was Mike Lawrence.
West Ham 2, Southampton 3. A cracking game here. Southampton looked well organised in the first half and took a deserved early lead from Mohamed El Anoussi. West Ham lacked a cutting edge. Changes had to be made. A double sub at half time brought top scorer Mikel Antonio off the bench. He headed West Ham level within 4 minutes. James Ward-Prowse struck a Southampton penalty after a lengthy VAR check on the hour before Syed Benrahma responded at the other end from close range for 2-2. Defender Jan Bednarek won it for the visitors with a rising header from a free kick to earn them a much needed victory. The fine margins yet again doing for West Ham. West Ham 2, Southampton 3.
Only two games survived in the Championship today. Huddersfield have just beaten Blackpool after nearly 10 minutes of injury time. Huddersfield have won by 3-2, and Middlesbrough into the playoff spots under Chris Wilder, beating Nottingham Forest by 2-0. In Scotland, Rangers have restored their 6-point lead at the top. Comfortable enough win for them, 2-0 against St Mirren. Earlier, Celtic had reduced the gap when they beat struggling St Johnstone 3-1 in the early kickoff. These are the last round of games before the winter break, which has been brought forward. Third place Hearts got past Ross County 2-1. Motherwell, who are in fourth place, edged out Livingston by the same scoreline. Aberdeen were also 2-1 winners against Dundee, and Hibs in the end got 2 late goals to triumph 3-1 in their game away to Dundee United. All right, our focus back onto the Premier League. Our Premier League coverage here on Off the Ball with thanks to Sky. Don't miss Newcastle versus Manchester United on Monday Night Football, which is live on Sky Sports. Vinnie Perth is with us, having watched Manchester City against Leicester in the Premier League. And Vinnie, kind of a strange game where you thought after 25 minutes that City could score as many goals as they wanted, particularly from set pieces, then seemed to switch off and allowed Leicester lots of space through the middle for a spell early in the second half, and then came back and won the game quite comfortably in the end.
Yeah, as you said, a strange game. I think, to be fair to Brendan Rodgers, I suppose he may have learned from his mistakes in the sense of he changed the shape at half-time. They were 4-0 down, and they were much better, much more organised in the second half, and they exploited some of City's weaknesses, if they have one. And for me, it's just sometimes in the full-back areas I think City are vulnerable. But they've done much better in the second half and got goals and just created a little bit of sense of nervousness around the ground. And ultimately, though, Leicester weren't good enough, lacked that little bit of quality in the final third, and City have quality all over the pitch and ran out worthy winners. And it could have been listen, it could be in 10-6 at one stage. So a strange game, entertaining, obviously with lots of goals. So yeah, busy day for goals. And I'd be a little bit worried of Guardiola, but he may just pass it off as one of them things our players just mentally switched off and around Christmas time. But it's a good day for City. They've put pressure on the teams chasing them.
They have defensive issues, Leicester, currently, between injuries and players they're missing away with COVID-19 currently. But how concerned would you be, Vinny, if you were setting this team up about how they defend set pieces? They've gone on to 15 goals now they've conceded from corners and free kicks this year. I know two of the goals were penalties today, but they really struggled to defend those Man City corners.
Yeah, listen, I didn't know that statistic. Nathan said it in the commentary, but that they were effectively the worst team doing it. So what they do is they do a mixture of zonal. Zonal's fine if you do it right. Zonal with three guys marking, and or their jobs is it's five across that 6 yard box, and the job of the other three is effectively to block runners. But you end up with someone like Tielemans marking and Ian Acho, the centre forward, who aren't necessarily people you would want marking, and they end up marking the runs of Laporte and Diaz, and that's a recipe for disaster for me. And the guys, the five on the line who don't come out and meet the ball, means you're in trouble. And every time City got a corner, we felt in commentary they looked like they could see it. And effectively, look, they've lost the game 6-3, but three of those goals came directly from set pieces, and it could have been more. So I think Brendan Rodgers, that's where I think he's an outstanding coach. He's one of the best around. But I'd be very disappointed how he set up the team from a set pieces wise, and not improving it at half time or making a slight change to it. That would be a huge concern. You cannot gift goals to, particularly to the likes of Man City, from set pieces.
Doesn't get any easier for Leicester. Liverpool to come in just 48 hours' time, having played them in the EFL Cup midweek too. These games are coming thick and fast, and when you have players missing like Leicester do, and that hamstring injury to Jamie Vardy as well. It's a difficult little period that Leicester are in now, Vinny.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think the confidence will take a real dent this week, conceding six. The only thing about that is that second half, Maddison played really well and he scored three goals. And I'm sure Rodgers will say, you know, he would have had a go off them at halftime. He would have asked him to go out and respond. So you might find that after the game now, he's picking the positives out of that second half performance, because that's what you do as a manager. You try and scrap for what could have got out of it. Vardy was on the bench, so you would say maybe if he was on the bench, it means he's close enough. He may come back into the team. Indeed, he didn't come on. I think he's an exceptional good player. Castagne came on at half-time, so he should be fresh enough. So they may have a stronger team against Liverpool, but the way they played today at times and the non-existent defending from the back four would make you be worried facing Liverpool again in less than 48 hours time at this stage. So yeah, it's a real concern for them. And Rodgers having a sticky patch with Leicester at the moment. He's done really well for me at the club, but there's a lot of excuses, to be fair, for their performances at the moment.
Perfect scenario, really, for Manchester City. Liverpool against Leeds called off earlier today. They can sit back, feed up, see how Chelsea get on against Aston Villa in this half five kickoff. They're able to use their squad extensively over this festive period. Scary at times when you see Grealish and Foden warming up in the second half when the team have already scored four goals. And they'll be able to probably rotate players in and out pretty seamlessly over this festive period.
Yeah, look, no matter what level you play at, or you manage at, or you coach at, okay, winning a league title is obviously the most difficult thing. The easiest way to win it is be out in front, obviously, and teams chasing it. Why? Because you look at Liverpool when they play Leicester in a couple of days' time. If it's nil all after 60 minutes, people in the crowd are getting nervous. There's just this fear, or we mightn't get it, we might drop points here, we might drop points here. Where Man City don't have that fear. They're 6 points clear, or they're always ahead. And if it's nil all in their games, then there's a bit more calmness around the place. And that's what you want to do. You put the teams that are chasing under pressure. And Chelsea will feel that today. So when the fixtures were set out maybe about a week ago, I'd imagine Klopp will be thinking, we get a good result against Leeds, that means City will be watching over the shoulders when they play Leicester, but hasn't worked out for them. So the suspensions is probably of the games has probably hurt Liverpool more, and it's put now Chelsea under real pressure, because they went from sort of leading the league to being 9 points behind City at this stage heading into their fixture. So later on against Villa, so away to Villa, which is a tough game. So that's what City are rubbing their hands now. They're putting teams under pressure, and that's it. The easiest way is winning the league is by putting the opposition under pressure and let them make the mistakes while you look after your own business.
Player's head and then swivels on and hits it with his foot in the corner, and we're all kind of stood there going, did he actually just do that?
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts, and download the OTB Sports app.
On the commentary, you wanted to give some credit to Mikel Arteta, and Nathan almost didn't let you in at that point. If you think about it, going back to early December when Aubameyang was getting punished and Arsenal had just lost three of their last four games when they were beaten in that midweek game against Everton, it's been a nice little turnaround from Arsenal. I know the fixtures were reasonably kind, but they've now won five games in a row and qualified for the semi-final of the League Cup. For a club who easily looked like they were in crisis position at the start of December, this has been a nice little turnaround for them over the last month.
Yeah, look, I suppose I'm a coach, a manager, whatever it is, by trade. So you always look for what's working at clubs. And you look at Arsenal, he's 2 years in the job actually today, if I'm not mistaken. I seen that somewhere this morning. So he's 2 years in the job, and you have ups and downs. It's like Brendan Rodgers. You'll have ups and downs, and you've got to give people a chance to change the... It's a lazy word to speak about clubs. Change the culture, change the DNA, and build something. And Arsenal, I think, are building something with a lot of good young players. And Arteta has done a really, really good job. You talk about that race for Champions League football. What he's done is he's put United under a bit of pressure. They play away tomorrow. They're almost 8 points behind Arsenal chasing fourth. And yes, they've got three games in hand, but they're under pressure. They can't afford a slip up. So he's done a great job. I've really been impressed by him. And I think we're being most impressed with him when things haven't been going well. He's remained calm. He stuck to his principles. Did he play out from the back a little bit too much? Probably for my liking. But at the same time, they've really built a lot of good young players. You look at Saka, has done really well for them. But for me, over the last month, Martinelli looks like a real star in the making. It looks like he's going to be the next best big thing in English football.
Is it worth, Finney, putting Martinelli through the middle now if you're Mikel Arteta? Because like, they've got this contract situation coming up with Lacazette and also with Nketiah, and you would think it's very difficult for Aubameyang to come back into the fold there again. Is it now the time to push Martinelli into the middle? Because he's been playing a lot of his football out wide on the right and not necessarily in the number nine position.
Listen, the situation about Lacazette leaving at the end of the season, in many ways, as a manager, he's got to ignore that and get the very best out of his team between now and the end of the season. If that means playing Lacazette, then he plays him. Lacazette does really well for them, I feel. I think he's slightly underrated. But there's no doubt that Martinelli, particularly with his pace, is a real threat for Arsenal, and he can lead the line. They've got the point to make about these young players. Smith Rowe can play, and he could play in Martinelli's position while he plays up front. But you can't play all these young kids together. Or if you do, you better be really, really strong behind. And I think they're finding their feet a little bit further back. So it's a mixture of all them things. There will come a time where I think Martinelli, for me, will lead the line for them. But where the real strength and depth has come from, I think Ben White has found his feet. And Ramsdale looks like, for me, he's the best English goalkeeper. I think he'll become the England sort of number one. So they're built on a decent platform, and it's given that 2 years he's had has given a bit of breathing space for those young players to come through.
Tottenham Hotspur then, again a good win today against Crystal Palace. We spoke earlier about Crystal Palace's issues with COVID-19. They're still a decent team on the pitch, and Wilfred Zaha was sent off. He was probably lucky not to be sent off when he was fighting with Tanganga in the reverse fixture. But Spurs win 3-0. Harry Kane is back among the goals again. Tottenham getting through against West Ham in the EFL Cup on Wednesday. Decent draw after their own COVID issues against Liverpool last Sunday. Antonio Conte seems convinced that Harry Kane is entirely committed to the club. And slowly but surely, we're maybe seeing Conte's influence now on the team.
Yeah, Conte's an outstanding manager. He's one of the best in the world, and he doesn't. You can see the improvement he's made to this team. They look really, really good. I thought they were very good against Liverpool. Liverpool probably deserved to win the game. A couple of decisions went against them, but I thought they were excellent that day. Very good during the week. Backed it up by knocking West Ham out. And yeah, to beat anyone in the Premiership 3-0 and comfortably, albeit Palace had a man sent off. Palace have COVID issues, but they're starting... team was more or less their first 11, but I don't think Harry Kane is going to go anywhere anytime soon, because I don't think the top clubs are going to spend the money that's needed to get him out of the club. City probably now I would say might have changed their mind slightly, not because Kane hasn't played brilliantly, just because they've probably gone down a different path in terms of their own setup. So I can see him staying there long term. I think if Tottenham are playing well or competing for the Champions League spots, I think Harry Kane is happy. But there's no doubt Conte's done a sensational job at that club. In the quick turnaround, they're up to fifth. And they've a couple of games in hand with Arsenal. They win both of them. They're level on points with Arsenal. So there's a real race on for that fourth spot between some big clubs, Arsenal, Spurs obviously, and Man United chasing. So things are really looking up for Tottenham Hotspur, and I think it's the manner in which they're doing it. They look a real team now. There's a togetherness about them, and the way the manager celebrates goals or different things, that breeds, I don't know what it is, that breeds a little bit of togetherness, confidence around the ground. And White Hart Lane's a good place when things are going well, and a difficult place for opposition. So they'll be very strong between now and the end of the season, I would feel.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Tottenham's official line will probably be they were disappointed by UEFA's decision not to allow the Rennes game to be played. But I wonder if deep down Antonio Conte will be thinking, not bad news to have the Conference League out of the way for the second half of the year, concentrate an assault on the top four, try and win the League Cup, try and win the FA Cup, finally get a bit of silverware after 13 years without one, and maybe that might help Tottenham. Finney, I noticed on the commentary as well, there was a slight joke in the middle of that where you joked about Mikel Arteta doing a good job and it doesn't always keep someone in a position. Haven't spoken to you since you left Dundalk. Were you surprised by the fact that the returning owners didn't keep your services for next season?
No, I wasn't necessarily surprised. Over the time, I mean, things happen and different things and different people have different personalities. And so it wasn't a big shock, no. In how it all played out, it was a long month from when they took over to when, you know, when they announced that I was leaving. So in that time you sort of get a feeling that people wanted to go a different route, which to be honest with you, I've had a long time there, so I don't necessarily think it was a bad idea that somebody new came in with a freshness into the place. So look, it's football, these things happen, and you get on with it and you move on. So I've had an amazing 9 years at Dundalk, and that's just the way it is, and that's the way modern football is now.
Yeah, still disappointing though, given that, you know, you'd stabilised things. I remember when we chatted after Liverpool and Leeds in early August, and you just lost against Longford, and you know, things looked perilous enough trying to stay up, and you were very confident that you would get the results that were required. And you know, in the end, a few more results towards the end of the season, you were almost flirting with the European spot. Such was the tightness of the bottom of the league this year. But like, to stay up fairly comfortably, I'm guessing you had a vibe even at that point, though, that they were going to go a different direction.
Oh, once they took over, you know, within sort of 24 hours, I sort of knew they were going to go down a different line. So, look, I'm bitterly disappointed we didn't qualify for Europe. I think the squad was capable. We had a lot of bad injuries at bad timing. You know, we go back to Tottenham, albeit UEFA have made the ruling, but Vitesse Arnhem who we should have knocked out of Europe have gone into the, you know, they've qualified out of that group in the Conference League. So we had a brilliant run the last sort of 4 or 5 months. But look, when it's as much personal as it is in terms of people's skill set, that's fine, and people make their own decisions, and Dundalk have gone a different route, and you know, good luck to them. That's their decision, and it is what it is. It's football. It's part of the game. You know, as I said, 9 years, it's been a long time, and it's probably the right time that somebody else tried something different.
Well, that someone else coming in to try and do something different is going to be Stephen O'Donnell on the back of St. Pat's winning the FAI Cup under him. I've been, to be honest with you, very impressed with the style of football that Pat's have played the last couple of years while he's been cutting his teeth. You've coached him, you know, while he was a captain and a legend of the player at Dundalk. Do you think he's going to do a good job at Oriel Park?
We don't know. I think Dundalk have to go on a rebuilding process. Of that, there's no doubt. They've lost Duffy, McElhenney, Sean Murray. That's a huge blow. The two fullbacks they've lost as well. Looks like Daniel Cleary will move out of the club. So they're huge losses. Huge people around the dressing room. Game changers and match winners. And they're not easy to replace. But it's the same issue. I mean, everybody, Dundalk is the news. It's all the talk was all the players out of contract, but they're in the exact same situation as so many other clubs where they're all looking in the same pond to sign players. So it is a difficult job to rebuild them. You know, there's no doubt that there's a lot of money left in that club for the new owners to spend. So if they spend it wisely, they'd be, you know, it will take a bit of time, but they can rebuild the club. Dundalk's a brilliant football town. People don't realise outside of Dundalk how big of a town it is. It's in terms of football, and it's the be all and end all, which isn't the case throughout the rest of the country, really. So they'll be well supported no matter what happens in the rebuild.
Yeah, look, while Robbie Benson has come back and there's been some good news like Pat Hooban signing a new contract, you look at all that experience that left that you just reeled off, like players who played in both of the Europa League group stage campaigns, and then you can almost add Chris Shields leaving earlier this year to go north of the border as well. Like, it's the core group really of that team that was so successful in winning doubles and playing in Europe have all pretty much departed the club in a 12-month period here.
Yeah, like when I took over, within a week or two, Chris Shields had gone, which was fine. And that deal was already done. Was fine in one sense because I had the players there, and then we picked up all them injuries, and we had to deal with it. But yeah, like, you know, they've lost so many big players out of dressing room that the rebuild will take a fair amount of time. So they have got money to spend. To be fair to the previous owners, have left them enough money to spend. So it's just whether they do it wisely enough. So time will tell on that, and we'll see. It'll be interesting. It's a difficult league next year. There's a lot of strength and depth in and around the league last season, and I think the problem we're having in our league though is so many of our good young players are now moving to the UK. You know, earlier than let's say they may have, or a lot of them are taking chances in the UK. There's probably a loss of strength and depth in the league at the moment, so we'll need some young new players to come through.
And finally, from what I'm hearing from you, you're very keen to get back into coaching straight away.
No, I'm not in okay. One sense, as in I had a couple of opportunities where they didn't come anything other than it was time for me to take a break. As I said, I've had 9 years at it. The game has changed. Some of the stuff that goes on around the game is not easy at times, so you've got to sometimes. And Dundalk was at, like, when I lost my job, it's 6-1 news it was on, so it's a big deal when I first lost it. So sometimes you need to take yourself out a little bit to rebuild and improve yourself. So I was in no rush to jump back in, and if I ever do go back in, it'll be for the right opportunity. As I said, I've had 9 good years at a decent level where we've achieved quite a lot. So if it's the end, so be it. And if it's not, and the right opportunity comes along, I'll grab it with both hands.
Well, look, it gives you the opportunity to be with us on Sunday afternoons watching games in the Premier League. Vinny, thanks a million for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
We're heading towards 5:30. Just a reminder in what happened in the festive racing today. Unfortunately, this weekend, Irish racing behind closed doors, but a huge Irish success in the Ladbrokes King George the Sixth Chase at Kempton today. Tornado Flyer springing a huge surprise there. The Cheltenham Gold Cup winner, Manella Indo, who had been touching with favouritism before the race, was beaten a long way out. Went to force the issue a little bit, the Henry de Bromhead horse under Rachel Blackmore, but then faded off in the race. Clonda Obo was in second place. St. Calvados was in third, with Frodon finishing up in fourth place. Epatant was a three lengths victor of the Ladbrokes Christmas Hurdle. That was her second victory in the Grade 1 contest. So 2019, second last year, and then winning again this year. Brave Man's Game maintained his unbeaten record over fences by claiming the scalp of Ahoy Senior in the Ladbrokes Cato Star Novices Chase. Elsewhere, the Willie Mullins trained Fernie Hollow edged out Gordon Elliott's Bevier de Tell to win the Racing Post Novice Chase at Leopardstown. That was the big race at Leopardstown today. The champion bumper winner, Sir Gerhard, making a seamless transition to hurdling with a straightforward victory in the Thornton's Recycling Maiden Hurdle at Leopardstown. Good day for the Mullins in a more general sense, really. Winning by 8 lengths from Highland Charge for Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. And there was a bit of a shock at Limerick in the Grade 1 Fahin Novice Chase. That was won by the 10-1 shot Master Mac Shee. We're going to take a very short break here on Off the Ball. When we come back, we'll be hearing from Ursula Jacob about Albert de Ballot winning a third All-Ireland Club Camogie title in the week just gone by. And we'll also hear from Ireland's golden swimming star of this week, Mona McSharry, after she won a medal at the World Short Course Championships in Abu Dhabi.